The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
My name is Gil Fronsdal, and since people are still coming, I'll say some of the least important things first, and that's about me. I've been a Buddhist practitioner, Buddhist meditation practitioner for pretty much my whole adult life. I started in earnest when I was about 21 and spent time in monasteries, Buddhist monasteries here in California. I was ordained as a Zen priest or Zen monk and spent time in monasteries in Japan and in Thailand and in Burma, where I was ordained for a while as a monk as well, different Buddhist tradition. I came to this area in 1990 in order to get do doctoral studies at Stanford in, of all things, Buddhist studies. And then while I was there, when I started there, then I was asked by a small sitting group that was meeting in Palo Alto if I would come and lead and teach that group. So I did, and that small group of about 12 people slowly grew, and so it grew and grew in various ways. And then in 2001, we bought this building here. We bought it from a minister couple who were kind of mystical Christians, and they would their church specialized in sitting in silence, and they really wanted us to have the church, because they felt that we were going to continue that tradition of sitting in silence, which we do here. So it's a nice connection. So welcome. And you've come to is the beginning of a six-week course where I introduce you to the practice of mindfulness and mindfulness meditation. Mindfulness has become quite popular in our culture in the last over the last 20 years. Almost like it's a trend right now, and you find mindfulness this and mindfulness that. It's very popular in psychotherapy. There's a lot of clinical applications of it in hospitals. People who suffer from pain and depression, and probably some of you are here having already done 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction course. Is that true? Some of you, yeah. In the Buddhist tradition, mindfulness lays really at the heart of what Buddhist practice is about. And it's from Buddhism in a big way that the inspiration has come, or the example has come, to apply it to all these secular ways here in our society. And mindfulness inherently is, in its essence, is not Buddhist. It's a certain kind of application of attention, the way we use attention. And there's nothing particularly mystical about it or esoteric. It involves attention. My mother, growing up, would regularly tell me, "Gil, pay attention." And it's probably my karma that now, as an adult, I practice this. This course in mindfulness practice is offered with the idea that mindfulness is very useful for people, certainly for stress reduction, for being able to enjoy their life more, to greater self-understanding, a little bit more able to focus, increase your focus and concentration. Many things which are kind of secular, nothing inherently Buddhist. And we at IMC are quite happy to have people enjoy mindfulness without having any relationship to Buddhism. This is a Buddhist center, and I'll make references to Buddhism, but we really don't care that much how much of the Buddhism you get. And we're certainly not trying to make you into Buddhists by coming here. What we're trying to do is to teach you a practice that many of us love quite deeply, find very useful, and we hope that you will take it and make it your own and find it useful for you. The course is done sequentially, and the idea that we build over the 6 weeks. So the idea is we start with something really simple application of mindfulness, and then we slowly expand it out to include more wider range of our experience that we might have as human beings. And we build until by the sixth week, hopefully, you understand how mindfulness can be applied in the full range of our experience as we live our life. That's applicable anywhere. The first week, today, I'll talk about meditation, the basics of meditation and posture and using the breath. Next week, I'll talk about a very important part of this practice and of Buddhism in general, and that is awareness of your body, being connected to your body, being embodied, and how being embodied is a great support for mindfulness practice. And then the third week, it's mindfulness of emotions, how to understand, how to bring mindfulness and attention in a useful way to our emotional life. And then on the basis of that, that becomes a good foundation to bring mindfulness to thinking. It's your best approach to really being wisely mindful, attentive to thinking, is if you're embodied first and well aware how to be present for emotions. They're kind of like the foundations for understanding thinking. And then with that as a foundation, then I'll talk about something a little bit more core to the human being, something in Buddhism we call the mind or the quality of the mind. And then from there, last week, we'll talk more about the applications into the rest of our daily life. So it builds sequentially. So it's helpful to come to all the classes. If you miss a class, there is a classes I've done in the past are on our website. And so you can go on our website, and a place on our website called Audio Dharma, and you can find classes in the past and listen to, like if you miss next week, you can listen to the second week from a year or two ago. And it's not exactly the same, because I never quite know what I'm going to say. That's why I like doing this. But the basics is basically the same. There's handouts that are passed out, somewhere floating around or by the door or someplace. And those handouts every week give a summary of what I've taught and give some kind of reflections that you can use, and also some exercises, some mindfulness exercises you might want to try during the week. You're applying yourself to the practice during the week is a great help to understand the instructions and what happens in the weeks that follow. Yes, please. We're probably more being made as we speak then. And I hope that as you go through this course, you'll learn both something about mindfulness, about attention, and how you can use it to your benefit, and also some various kinds of perspectives, Buddhist perspectives, other perspectives, that are quite interesting for a new understanding or a new approach to understand things like emotions, your body, thoughts, and how you kind of go about your life. Everything at IMC, at the center, as is part of our tradition, is offered freely. And it's our belief and our understanding that the practice of attention is something each person needs to do freely on their own. It's not something that you can buy, because, you know, it's something you have to do. And that the spirit of generosity, the spirit of freely givenness, is really very supportive and helpful for Buddhist practice as a whole. And so we offer what we do here quite freely. And we don't ask for payment of any kind. For those people who are inspired or would like to support what we do so we can have a building like this and do what we do, we have this box by the door, donation box, and it has two slots. And one slot that says operations is to pay for the operations of our center, the building and heat and whatever. And the other slot is for the teacher, whoever's teaching a particular event. So today I would be the teacher. So you can, if you'd like to make a donation, that's very gratefully received. But it's not really required, not at all required. It's freely offered what we give here. So with that, as an introduction, let me say a few things about mindfulness. Because mindfulness has become popular in our culture, sometimes it's maybe useful to use another word rather than mindfulness. And two words that I like to use, one is noticing. It's the practice of noticing what is happening as it's happening. If you're distracted and thinking about something else, thinking about the future or the past or thinking about some fantasy or something, then you're distracted from really noticing carefully what's happening right here. Or if you're very reactive and caught up in your reactions to what's happening, your judgments about what's happening, those reactions and judgments put a veil over the eyes and you can't really see accurately in an unbiased way what's actually going on here and now. So mindfulness has a lot to do with clearing the filters from the mind or the eyes so we can see clearly what is happening while it's happening. And it sounds like a very simple thing. It is simple, but it's hard to do. It's hard to remember to do it because the mind has all kinds of mind has a mind of its own, and it wanders off into all kinds of thoughts and concerns. And you'll probably find very quickly when you start meditating that you set your mind to be in the present moment, and before you know it, you're somewhere else. And so you have to train the mind to come back to the present moment. And meditation is a lot to do with this training of training the mind, settling the mind, calming down the mind down enough so you have some high-quality ability to pay attention to what's happening here. Part of that training is to begin to understand something about the forces of distraction, forces of reactivity, so you can have some wisdom, and wisdom supports the wise understanding of how you operate, what motivates you, what makes you tick, supports your capacity to be present in a full way. So even though being present is a very simple thing, so much of our what drives us as human beings flows into being distracted, being caught up, being reactive, that as we learn to be present in a simple way, we encounter so much of the complexity of who we are, and we get to work through it, settle it down, calm it down, resolve some things, and eventually find this tremendous gift, this wonderful, precious blessing, which is to have a simplicity of being just here, and safe, content, peaceful, at ease, at this moment, here. Many people don't feel much ease in their life. It's quite something to actually feel the heart just being at ease, at peace. So it's a practice of noticing, and noticing with a kind of a higher quality of attention than people mostly have. Another word that I like as a synonym for mindfulness is the word attending, to attend to our experience. And attending is a little bit more kind of a fuller kind of feeling to it than noticing. Noticing maybe has kind of a mental quality to it. But attending is something like when you attend to somebody who's sick, you know, you bring yourself to them in a very full, complete, kind of heartfelt way. So mindfulness is also the practice of attending to whatever needs attention at the present moment. So attending to our breath, when we're doing breath meditation, attending to our feelings, attending to our mind, attending to our tiredness, attending to our speech as we speak, attending to listening. We bring some carefulness and care to the attention we bring to listening to someone else who's speaking. And so the in that mindfulness brings much more than just noticing. It brings a quality of heartfeltness or fullness, or it has a kind of rich, almost emotional quality to it. It's not something dry to pay attention to, but it opens up to some real kind of depth of feeling, depth of being that's quite beautiful. It's a wonderful adventure, I feel, to begin developing our capacity to pay attention carefully. It's an adventure into the all kinds of aspects of our inner life that people often don't attend to, both the beautiful aspects of our inner life, but also the ones that are difficult and challenge. And so sometimes mindfulness is a struggle. There's a cliche that floats around somewhere that says, self-knowledge is seldom good news. And so when you stop all the busyness of the mind, distractions of the mind, turn off the TV, and just sit with yourself, you get to meet yourself. And sometimes what you meet is not so pleasant. And so it takes a certain amount of courage to do this practice, and a certain amount of willingness and strength to really face oneself and then stay present and work with what we see. Not to really kind of to feel worse about yourself, but rather in a very hopeful way, realizing that as you confront and meet yourself in this way, you can work through the very forces that keep you preoccupied, caught up, reactive. And as those settle away, what's left is beautiful, is really peaceful. The heart, the mind, which is not distracted, the heart and mind, which is not reactive, is a beautiful heart. It's a heart with your heart-mind, which is at peace. And so we encounter both what's difficult within us when we do this, but we also find what's really beautiful. And for some people, it's a kind of profound beauty that maybe they've never experienced before. Or some people, it's something they only experienced when they were a child. And they kind of been long forgotten, but then it's rediscovered. So the practice of mindfulness can be done in any situation at all. It's not limited to meditation practice. But primarily for this course, I'll focus on mindfulness in meditation, where we're thinking of meditation as kind of a laboratory for beginning to explore the nature of attention and the nature of you in relationship to attention, what happens. And my hope is that as you get a better sense of mindfulness in meditation, that will directly, you'll begin understanding how that applies directly to paying more careful attention, more useful attention in your daily life and all the things that you do. So in that regard, meditation practice begins with the posture you take, the meditation posture you take. And so one of the things we begin being mindful of, paying attention to, noticing, is what goes on in our body in terms of our posture. And it's very kind of, I think, instructive that we have this English expression or use of the word posture, where it also means posturing. You know, he was posturing for, you know, whatever. And a lot of our attitude about life is sometimes expressed in posture. And so rather than just taking a posture that's casual and just kind of business as usual, in order to start being a little bit more mindfully or deliberately mindful or really here, it really helps to give attention to your posture when you meditate. So you sit with a posture that expresses more alertness than probably you'd normally take when you sit down. In order to do that, and also you want to see, if you're going to meditate for some time, you want to take a posture that is going to be comfortable enough so that you're going to be able to sit for some period of time as well. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time going over some of the points about posture, and then you can try it out, and then we'll do a short period of meditation. I'll guide you in the meditation. And I'll describe meditation posture both for sitting on the floor but also for sitting in the chair as well. It's fine to meditate in the chair. So, the most important thing about posture is that you have a straight spine. Your spine is upright and alert. And in order to have that upright spine, what we try to do is to have a good foundation for the torso. And one of the reasons we sit cross-legged on the floor is that it makes a nice tripod of your two knees and your butt, and that broad base and your low center of gravity makes it kind of much easier to keep your spine, your torso upright in a nice way, and it makes it easier to relax. It's easier to relax the belly and kind of feel more supported and grounded. And now, if you're going to try this sitting on the floor, the recommendation I give is that you don't actually sit cross-legged, but you sit what's called a tailor fashion or Burmese fashion, which is one leg in front of the other. I don't know if you can see out there, if you can see my arms, how I have my arms. So they're not actually crossed, but the lower part of one leg is in front of the lower half of the other leg. And that puts the least amount of torque on your knees. And it's the most symmetrical, most balanced way of sitting. If your hips are tight and knees are tight, what you want to do is you always want to sit up on a cushion, to be raised. Most of you here are already doing that. So you want to get a cushion of some kind. And being sitting raised makes it easier to get your knees down, so your knees are down on the ground. It also kind of gives a little curve or helps support the natural curve in the lower part of your back, which makes it easier to keep yourself upright over a long time. If you can't get your knees down, one of the things you can do is get another pillow or a sweater or a pillow or something and put it underneath your knees like this. Like, you know, just underneath your knees, so your knees are not dangling in the air, but is supported a little bit. Also, if you get your knees almost down to the floor, you might want to experiment with sitting higher. The higher you go, the easier it is to get the knees down. If you're very, very loose in the hips, then sitting really low to the floor tends to work the best. If you have trouble sitting cross-legged, you still want to be on the floor, another alternative is to sit on your knees. And if you have a round cushion, you can put it upright and then stick it between your ankles and then sit down on it. So you're not actually putting all your weight on your knees, but you're actually sitting up. Most of the weight goes on the cushion. And this is a nice alternative of sitting. Some people have we have benches at the end of the stage in the little cubby hole there. I don't know, is anybody, there's a bench. So you can sit, that does very much the same thing, a little bit broader stable support than these cushions. And some people prefer sitting this way. People who sit cross-legged or sit this way and are new to it, it's common, relatively common for the legs to fall asleep. And if they fall asleep, you can always, you know, change your posture and adjust it a little bit. Usually it's not a problem to have your legs fall asleep, except that you should be very slow about getting up. Once, many years ago, in a retreat, a woman cracked a bone in her foot because she got up too quickly when her foot was asleep. So you massage it or shake it out a little bit and just wait. And if the sensation comes back within a couple of minutes, then it's the blood which was cut and some of the circulation was cut. But if it takes more than 4 or 5 or 6 minutes for the sensations to come back to your leg, then what you're doing, you're pinching a nerve. It's very rare that happens, but it's worthwhile mentioning that if you find it takes that long for the sensation to come back, then you're pinching a nerve, and you never want to sit that way again. You might want to sit close to that way, but you want to adjust so that you don't have that kind of pinching. And generally, the circulation issues work themselves out after a few weeks of regularly sitting. If you're sitting on a chair, you also want to have a firm foundation underneath your torso. And the recommendation is that you have your legs placed so that your feet, soles of your feet, are flat. And if you're tall enough, you have them on the ground. If you need to, you can put a pillow underneath or something so you have that strong, good foundation for your feet. The classic instructions for sitting on the chair is to have your legs parallel to each other, though some people like to have them out to the side to have a wider support. When you're sitting on the chair, it's best if your knees are not higher than your hips. Because if they are higher, then it pushes out the lower part of your back, which creates a strain there. So, so some people are really tall, sitting in a chair might need to put a cushion on the chair to sit even higher. If you're sitting in a chair, the recommendation is that you do not use the backrest. Now some people need to use a backrest because of back issues or whatever. But just because you're lazy is not a reason for avoiding the backrest. And the reason for this is that there is a strong correlation, strong relationship between our posture that we take and our inner psychological life. And to the degree to which mindfulness is about learning to be self-reliant through the mindfulness practice, it's easier to discover that self-reliance if you're not relying on the backrest. And so we ask that people don't. Now, if you do need to use the backrest, by all means do it. But if you can, if you have to use the backrest, then the preferred way is to get support low down. Sometimes it's really nice to roll up a towel really tight and put it behind the lower part of your back and push yourself way back into the chair and have a really firm support at the lower part of your back. If you have to use the whole backrest, that's fine as well. A nice thing to do then is also take a towel, roll it up, and then put it vertically along your spine. So when you lean back, it kind of pushes your spine in a little bit and allows your chest and your shoulder blades to open up and your shoulder blades to kind of fall back a little bit, which can be nice. Whether you're sitting on the chair or sitting on the floor, there is a kind of a little trick that people do, which is you take your hands on either side of your hips, on the mat or on the floor or on the side of the chair, and you push yourself almost off the mat, the pillow or the chair, so your chest comes out a little bit. And then as you release your hands, your arms this way, you allow your shoulders to roll back a little bit. If you do that, you probably find your shoulders a little more open, more relaxed. You probably find that your chest a little more open, and your spine will be a little bit more alert that way. You can do anything you want with your hands so that they're symmetrical, doing the same thing. I like to have it on my thighs, near my knees. The classic way in Buddhist meditation is to actually have your hands together, one on top of the other, in front of your navel, kind of in front of you here. Either way, one thing you want to be careful for is you don't have your hands so far forward or so far down that it's pulling your shoulders forward and creating a strain, kind of the top of your shoulders and your neck. So sometimes you need to pull your hands back up your thigh, closer to your body. Or if you're keeping them in front of you together, and they're down on your ankles, all the way down your heels or something, then sometimes that pulls you forward. And so you can get another pillow or a blanket or something and put it on top of your feet so that you have them, your hands are held higher up. So what else? And then the head should be in the shoulders, squarely, in a balanced way. And what happens sometimes when people think a lot in meditation, it seems that sometimes their chins go out like this. And so you're supposed to tuck the chin down a little bit and back. And they say that's supposed to, that controls the thinking mind. But you'll do it and not believe it. And sometimes people will tip their heads to the side or some way. And your best is to, if you, the least amount of strain on your muscles is if your head is actually not bent or twisted or whatever, just squarely on top. In our tradition, we encourage people to meditate with the eyes closed. It's not required. Some people prefer to meditate with the eyes open. But if it's all the same to you, you might, you know, meditate with the eyes closed. So that's the kind of basics of posture. Do you have any questions about that so far that you'd like to ask before we try doing it? Seems clear enough? Okay, so you've been sitting now for half an hour, and we're going to meditate now. So you might want to stand up and stretch for 30 seconds or so and just kind of refresh. So I want to make a very important point. And I say it that way as a preface. I'm going to say a very important point, so you'll listen more carefully. That's why people do such things, right? So, and now I'm emphasizing it. So the very important point is that mindfulness practice is essentially about noticing what's happening as it's happening. It's not about having something special happen. It's not about having some kind of special experience. It's about noticing the experience you're having. So what that means is that in a few minutes I'm going to instruct you to pay attention to your breathing. And if everything goes really well, you will be completely present for every breath. But chances are it doesn't go that well. Now, a common thing is that when you're told to do something and you can't do it very well, people get frustrated and all kinds of reactions to it. In this practice here, we encourage you, if possible, don't worry. Don't react. Rather, don't be upset you can't do what the instructions are following the breath. Rather, be content to notice what it's like not to be able to follow the breath. If you notice what it's like not to follow the breath, to notice how much your mind is distracted, then you're doing the practice. You got that? So it means you, as long as you're noticing what's happening, you can't do this wrong. Okay. So, take a meditation posture. Trying to be a little bit more alert with your spine. That may be your natural tendency. And gently close your eyes. It's often good at the beginning of a meditation session to take a few long, slow, deep breaths as a way of connecting to your body, connecting to here. And as you take a long, deep breath, feel your rib cage expand, your belly expand outwards, stretching almost like a massage from the inside. And then as you exhale, deep, long exhale, relax. See if you can soften some of the tensions of the day. And let go and kind of settle into this posture, this body, this place you're sitting. A few long, slow, deep breaths. Letting go as you exhale. And having done that a few times, then let your breathing return to normal. And in our particular meditation tradition, we make no special effort to breathe in any special way. It's like no yogic breathing, for example. Just let your breathing be as it is, simple way. And also at the beginning of a meditation session, it can be helpful to scan through your body, look around your body, to see if there's any muscles that might be easy to relax. So for example, you might be able to relax a little bit around the eyes, the forehead. Perhaps you can soften the jaws. Perhaps as you exhale, you can relax your shoulders a little bit. Shoulders, shoulder blade area. And particularly useful is to relax your belly. It can be often very difficult to do this, so don't worry if you can't do it, but just sort of a softening, let your belly hang forward. And then, feeling your body, being aware of your body, notice how your body experiences breathing. What happens in your body as you breathe? As your chest expands and contracts, the belly moves, rises and falls, as the air, the sensations that occur, the air goes in and out through your nostrils. Notice how your body experiences breathing. Then notice what part of your body where that's easiest to feel breathing. It's easiest to feel it in the chest, as the chest moves, or as the belly moves, or as the air goes in and out through the nostrils. Notice where it's easiest for you, most comfortable. Or if you don't feel your breath very easily, breathing, you can put your hand on your belly or in your lower part of your chest or something and just feel the movement through your hand. So the idea is to train your attention to stay in the present moment by staying present with the alternating sensations of breathing in and breathing out. Feel the experience of breathing. And try to stay there so you can feel one breath after the other. inevitably the mind will wander off in thought and lose the connection to breathing. When that happens, be content to notice that. Notice that that's happened. And then as soon as you can, let go of your thoughts, your concerns, and bring your attention back into the experience of breathing. Bring it back to your experience of breathing, and then try to stay there, resting, staying focused. There may be all kinds of thoughts and judgments that keep pulling your attention away from breathing. See the best that you can not to get involved in those thoughts and those judgments. Don't give them the kind of authority that would hijack your attention. And rather, pour your awareness into breathing. Just notice your breath, letting each in-breath, each out-breath, be known with as much clarity as possible. Help you stay with the breathing, and very softly, a whisper in the mind, say the word in as you breathe in, and out as you breathe out. And as you whisper that those words, let those words be like an encouragement to feel the experience of breathing in, to feel what how the body experiences breathing in and out, breathing out. So we'll continue for another 2 minutes. And those 2 minutes, see if you can connect, stay connected to as many breaths in a row as possible. Staying relaxed, but very attentive. Breathing in, breathing out. And then to end a session of meditation, it's useful to take 2 or 3 long, deep breaths again as you breathe in deeply, feeling your body. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. How your attention is utilized is very consequential. And one way to kind of maybe understand this is to consider that attention is kind of like food. And it's a food that feeds whatever it's focused on. So if attention, your attention, is focused on being anxious, guess what gets fed? Your anxiety. If it's focused on anger, anger. If it's focused on resentments, that's what gets fed. If it's focused on being generous, generosity gets fed. If it's focused on being present gets fed. If it's in a sense focused on being distracted, so our attention is hijacked by our concerns, preoccupations, then being distracted gets fed. So the practice of mindfulness is taking this food and beginning to apply it in a direction or feeding it to something which is useful for us to feed. And it's a slow process of learning to train or redirect our attention. So it begins feeding something wholesome, some beneficial for us. And we say in Buddhism at least that one of the most beneficial things to feed is our capacity to be really present in a clear way, to really know what's happening when it's happening without being reactive to what's happening. It's kind of clear, present kind of awareness. And as that, as we cultivate or feed that kind of presence, that sense of present attention becomes stronger and stronger. And it becomes, in Buddhism we say, it becomes the most precious jewel that you have when it stands out and becomes a very strong, almost like power in its own right. So probably many of you, in doing this breath meditation, noticed how easy it was for the mind to wander off. Because the habit of feeding certain things is quite strong in us. It's so strong that some Buddhists will refer to the, talk about people have an addiction to thinking. That we have, it's almost impossible not to be kind of so strongly pulled into something. Some of you might have noticed that your mind is out of control. And you might have felt somewhat discouraged, even though I told you beforehand there was no need to be discouraged. What we say is that if you notice that your mind is out of control, you've reached the first stage of insight, the first stage of meditation. Congratulations. And the first stage is to realize your mind is out of control, to know that. We also say that if you have an out-of-control mind, it's a lot better to know it's out of control than to not know it. If you don't know it, you're more likely to get in trouble. If you know it, you have some hope. So please don't feel discouraged if you noticed. Just the fact that you noticed that is very meaningful. And it's a beginning of how we begin working. It's actually quite a big step. And so then we can start working with that. And when you notice that, instead of kind of being discouraged, you can say, oh, look at that. It's out of control. Let me bring my attention back to the breath. It doesn't matter how many times your mind wanders off from the breath. It only matters how many times you bring it back. And you bring it back over and over again. Each time you bring it back, in a small way, you're breaking the habits of a lifetime to be distracted, to be caught up, to be preoccupied, to have the mind go off here and there. And it's very powerful, that breaking of a habit. And so it might seem like a very slow process, but it's actually a lot faster to break the habit of preoccupation than all those mind minutes that you spent in your life not really being attentive, being distracted. There's been a lot, I suspect. And if you add up all the distracted moments with the amount of moments it takes to start showing up and being present, it doesn't take a lot, relatively, to really start having quality presence, even though it's a slow process to do it. So does anyone have any comments they'd like to make or questions about that meditation session? How long was it? How long did it take? We did 20 minutes.
I really noticed my heartbeat very distinctly.
Yes. Yeah, that's fine. And you notice that and appreciate your heart, and then go over and come back to your breathing. Let the heartbeat be in the background.
I noticed on the sheet it said to meditate for 20 minutes, and I was wondering if that was a magic number.
No. It's a magic number because for people who are new, it might be a bit challenging to go do more. And for people who are new, it might also be not only challenging to do it, it might be challenging to find more time in busy life. So I just thought that if we started with 15 or 20 minutes and get kind of a hang of it. And once you get a hang of it, then to start doing more. And that's what the instruction is going to be. So next week, I think if this week is 20 minutes, next week it'll be 25. The sheet next week will say do 25. And the third week will say do 30. I mean, we might top out at 30. I don't remember what the sheets say anymore. But slowly increase the amount. And then at the end of the course, you can decide what's a good time, a good length of time for you in your particular life. Whether you 20 minutes might be a great length of time.
And then what do you recommend as a way of timing it? Because I know I'll be looking at my watch or the clock or I get kind of distracted.
Uh-huh, great question. Yes. So it's good to have some kind of timer that you use. Some people have cell phones. They have timers. You can program your cell phone to go off every 10 minutes. Some people use a kitchen timer. The old style way was you got incense that burned for a certain length of time. And you get 10-minute incense and 15-minute incense, and you get the right length incense and burn it. And when it stopped burning, you knew your time was up. There are some people who record silence. At the end of the silence, they ring a bell. And then they have a recording of 20-minute silence, recording of 30-minute silence with a bell. And then they whatever length of time they want to sit, they play that recording. And those kinds of recordings are found a variety of places. You can download them from the web. And our website has meditation timers you can use. So you just use it on the web or download it, I guess, right? You can download it?
On
MP3s, so you can put it in the MP3 players.
Or you can play it on your computer.
Play it on your computer. You and your computer can meditate. It's good to have some kind of timer because, especially if you're relatively new, because you don't want to be looking at your watch a lot. Every time you look at your watch, you're making your mind busy, and it's harder to settle down.
I started to doze off. Is that good, bad, or different, or what?
It is what it is. So it's good you noticed it. That's the practice. So you notice that. So it's very common for people to get sleepy. Sometimes this time of day is not necessarily a good time for some people to meditate. A lot of people prefer to meditate first thing in the morning when they're fresh, or relatively early in the morning. And so that's a good time for many people to do it. But it's hard for us to do an intro class in you know, early in the morning. So we do it in the evening. A lot of Americans are sleep deprived, and some people need to sleep more than they need to meditate. So in that case, maybe you're better off sleeping, you know, you know, and catching up a little bit.
Well, I just had a big meal. Is that also a good time to eat or not eat?
Yeah. It's often not good to meditate right after a big meal for that reason. So maybe next week, you know, eat the light supper and then snack after you get home, maybe. There's many reasons for sleepiness in meditation. Some of them are biological, physiological, you're tired, you've eaten too much or whatever. Some are psychological. There are psychological reasons. It's almost like a defense mechanism sometimes that people fall asleep a lot so they don't have to face what's going on. You see that in little babies. If babies go into an environment that's overstimulated, with a lot of sound and noise, they'll fall asleep. It's a wonderful protective mechanism for the babies. As adults, that seems sometimes that protective mechanism still operates, mostly when it's not noisy, but when it's the psychological noise. It's something we're looking at, some difficult emotions or memory or something wants to surface, and we don't want to look at it, so we fall asleep, some people. And there's other reasons for sleepiness as well. What we do with the mindfulness practice is do some simple things to try to bring more alertness. You can sit up straighter, can help. You can open your eyes, and keeping your eyes open when you meditate brings more alertness. It's a little bit harder to fall asleep. Usually pointing your eyes about 45 degrees down. You can, I used to wash my face, my neck, my hands, and my feet with cold water before I'd meditate when I was sleepy, and that kind of brought some vigor. It helps if you meditate in a place, in a room that's not so hot like this one. Classically, the instruction is to meditate in a place that's kind of cool. And it's better to be in a cool place and wear warm clothes so there's kind of cool air on your face and stuff than it is to be really hot. Yeah, so there's simple things like that to do. Now, if those kinds of things don't correct for it, then what we do in mindfulness meditation, again, mindfulness meditation is noticing what's happening when it's happening. If you're sleepy, then we notice what it's like to be sleepy. And if you really get into explore the terrain of sleepiness, how your cheeks feel hot and maybe droopy and your eyes are heavy and sandy and you feel kind of lethargic and, you know, mind feels like a swamp. You know, you begin feeling all those things and really not reacting to it, but just being interested in exploring it. Then you're doing mindful investigation. And sometimes that's enough to get wake up enough interest to stay awake. What's very interesting about sleepiness is the relationship that interest has with sleepiness. Because you can, I'm sure I could say something to you that your sleepiness would vanish. You know, because it's so charged, it's so juicy. And so you're suddenly interested in something. And a minute ago, I just couldn't stay awake, and now I can't sleep. What we're interested in and what's going on has a lot to do with it. So is there some way of awakening a healthy interest for being fully present? So those are many things you can try and experiment with, but it's a common enough experience. You want to do your best with it. Try to be mindful. Try not to fall asleep. But what you don't want to do is just to fight it. You know, like a real struggle. Like it's bad, you shouldn't be happening. You do your best and you work with it. Make sense? Anything else? Yes, here in the front.
I'd be considered an expert meditator when I no longer hear the cars and other people breathing and my shoulder doesn't hurt anymore and all I can focus on is my breath. Because I heard everything but my breath.
Not necessarily. If you can zoom into your breath and be so focused on it, so absorbed in it, that you don't hear what's going on around you, it doesn't necessarily mean you're an expert meditator. It means you're a concentrated meditator, and which is nice. If you're aware of everything but your breath, but you're really present in a very acute way, you really know what's going on. You're not reactive to it. You're not troubled by it. That's as good a form of mindfulness as focusing on your breath. So right now it doesn't make so much sense, but as we go on in the weeks, you'll understand how paying attention to many different things, anything at all actually, can be a very productive and useful mindfulness session. And listening to sounds, we'll talk about next week, is one of the ways to develop a great calm. Just listening to this and being very present for the sounds around you. But for now, I'd encourage you to just kind of just use the breath. Like for the next week, just whenever you can remember, come back to the breath. Come back to the breath. And it's very, very useful to do this. So one more. Yeah.
Several times I noticed that my posture wasn't what it was when I started. And then having noticed that, I sort of had a decision of, well, do I adjust my posture or am I fidgeting? Or so when you notice that you're, you know, especially with like my head would kind of be trending forward, right. do I then adjust or just say, oh, my head is in a different place now and deal with it?
Uh-huh. I think that, you know, for a beginner, I think it's fine to adjust your posture and sit up again straight whenever you can. The posture helps you to be present, so please do that. If you do this for any length of time, you want to start learning not to move so much. And maybe you only adjust the posture a couple of times, two or three times in the course of a sitting. And if you after doing this for if you really kind of get the hang of all this and how it works, at some point, rather than shifting your posture, you want to bring a very clear mindfulness of what it's like to be slumped. Okay? Mindfulness is notice what's happening as it's happening. If you're slumped, you notice what it's like to be slumped. And really get into it and feel it. And there's something, it might be something very important for you to learn by really offering some real attention to that experience. So maybe one more, somebody way in the back.
So, yeah, my question was related to that question. And it is, so one thing that happened was my back was hurting. So I noticed my back was hurting, but that didn't help because it was still hurting, you know. So then I just slumped a little bit, and then it stopped hurting, and then it was easier to focus on my breath. But then I thought, then I started to wonder, I'm not supposed to be slumping because he told us about the posture. And then, so I don't understand. I mean, is the goal to have the right posture, or shouldn't I just slump and then I can focus more easily on the breath? You know what I mean? I don't understand.
Yeah, the answer is yes to all the above. So ideally, you would sit with a straight posture. Some people can't do that. You know, it's interesting that when I was meditating in Burma, Burmese women, for whatever reason, sat in a very dignified way, always upright, very straight. It was always inspiring to see the women meditate. One of the great sights of my life was a woman's meditation hall in Burma. There was this big, big building that had open sides on two sides. And I would walk by in the morning to go for breakfast. I'd walk by the women's meditation hall. And there was row after row of women, 500 women meditating at the same time, all of them upright and dignified. It was a powerful thing to see. The Burmese men, on the other hand, they would meditate like this, slumped over their heads, almost in their laps. Both postures, you can get enlightened in both postures. However, one posture is going to be, especially for people in the West who spend a lot of time at the desks and slumped over anyway, you can get a lot of back pain when you're bent over that way. And if you want to really do this for a long time, you really want to develop good postural habits so you're not aggravating strain in your back and compressions of the discs and all kinds of things. So, but it's your choice how you negotiate that. Perhaps you're better off just staying straight and dealing with the pain. Maybe it's just weak muscles and you have to build the strength. Or maybe you have some kind of back issue and you don't want to aggravate it. And so for you, maybe it's better to stay slumped and meditate that way. And that works best for you. So there's no right answer. Just you have to experiment and see how it is for you. But what you don't want to do is just do something because you're lazy. You know, you want to build some capacity. So you're starting. So if you keep it up, then slowly you want to build some strength in your muscles. Some of the pain in the back has to do with weak muscles. Some of it sometimes has to do with holding patterns. There can be a lot of knots in our muscles in our back, chronic held tension. And one of the things about chronically tense muscles is as they begin to, when they're chronically tense, they tend to go numb. As they begin to relax, they tend to come awake. And as they become awake, they begin hurting. And so you're not necessarily going backwards because it hurts. It means actually you're going forward. You begin to unravel the tension. And so you have to kind of stay and let it unravel. And sometimes back pain has to do with some kind of, medical condition you have to take care of. So I don't know if that helped you with your question, but that was the answer you got. Okay. So it's best to choose a particular time of day to do your meditation. So you have some consistency and regularity. The psyche, the mind, really benefits from regularity. So if you meditate every day at the same time, more or less the same time, your system kind of gets used to that time, associates the time of meditation, and the habit or the familiarity kind of helps getting into it. It helps with discipline. It's easier sometimes to do it every day if that's the time to do it. So many people find it's useful to do it in the morning, relatively early. Some people first thing, some people after they have the shower, some people have to do it after they have the coffee. But in the morning sometime. And also the day hasn't started so much. Some people actually find that it works a lot better to do it in the evening. And one of the benefits of the late afternoon and the evening is it's often a good way of kind of sloughing off much of the tension or the buildup of the day and kind of clearing out. So some people like it that time. Some people like to do it both times. It's also good to have a particular place that's also associated with meditation, so a regular place. If you have a home that's big enough, perhaps there's some corner of the house that can just be for meditation. So there's no other associations with that place. So when you sit down and meditate, you don't think about something else. And it helps if you wear loose clothes. It helps if you turn off your phones, things like that. It also helps if you don't believe everything your mind tells you. Now, this is a generally good advice in many situations, to not automatically believe everything your mind says. But, for example, you could be sitting and meditating quite content and quite happy, and suddenly there is this very compelling voice, command, that informs you that right now is the right time, the only right time, to defrost the freezer. And it has to. And, people get up and they suddenly they're doing all, the freezer could have waited. So you want to be careful for those voices that kind of take you out, insist that something else has to happen. And so you have some discipline, stay present and learn. Occasionally, when there's forces of distraction, like to end meditation or pull you into fantasy or something, sometimes it's actually a trick of the mind to prevent you from facing something you need to face, to be present for something. So there has to be some capacity to be committed to kind of stay present and not give in to some of these voices and commands that come along. This meditation practice has helped a lot if you can have whatever you can do to avoid being self-critical as you do it. Don't waste any time thinking, oh, I'm doing such a bad job, this is too hard for me, I'll never get around to it, my mind is just too tricky. Any kind of self-criticism or doubt about what's going on is not useful. If you insist on doing it, then just be mindful. Just know you're doing it. Practice is know what's happening when it's happening. But if you can just let go or just don't believe it or let it be in the background chatter and just don't give it any much attention, it really helps a lot so you don't get worked up somehow. It's also helpful if you don't try to measure your meditation right away. You sit down, follow two breaths and say, well, how am I doing? It's kind of like the farmer who goes out in her field and the corn plant was planted and there's little corn seedlings coming out of the ground and she pulls the plant out of the ground to see how it's growing. You see how it's growing, yes, but you can't put it back in. That's it for the plant. So just don't spend a lot of time evaluating and judging how. Just do your best and maybe evaluate after a few months how it's going. In Buddhism, we say that your breathing is a really good friend for you. And as you develop a habit of checking in with your breathing, getting familiar with your breathing will teach you a lot. You'll notice when your breathing gets tight, constricted, goes fast, whatever, And it'll show you many of the things going on in your inner life. And if you can learn to tune into your breath and be familiar with it, you can then also perhaps learn to keep your breath relaxed. And a relaxed breath is a great lubricant for life. It's very hard to get, it's easy for human beings to get attached, to cling, to resist, to get caught up in things. It's much harder to get caught by things or attached to things, to your thoughts, your concerns of the moment, if you keep your breath relaxed. And so as you make a habit of coming back and getting familiar with your breath, knowing your breath, knowing what a relaxed breath is, then you have more choice perhaps to monitor your breath and perhaps adjust your breath as you go through your daily life and coming back to a soft breath. And it can be as easy as, if you're standing in a supermarket checkout line and there's some people ahead of you, you could spend your time, if you want, judging what the other people buy. You can feed that part of your mind. Or you could use that time to focus on your breathing. And you might find out what's going on with your breath. And it might be, in Buddhism we say that what's going on with your breath is a window into your soul. Though we don't have souls in Buddhism. Into your psyche. So it's a really great, breathing is a really great friend for you. And so the exercise we do this week of, in meditation of using your breath, coming back to your breath, coming back to your breath, will serve you in many, many ways in your life if you kind of develop that practice. As you develop a little more familiarity with your breathing and the whole world of breathing that way, that'll become a support for understanding the instructions next week, which is mindfulness of the body. And then, as I said, we build on that from there. So what else I can say here today? Maybe there is more to say, but maybe based on a question. Yes, please.
Something in what you said sounds contradictory, and what I've read about mindfulness is that when thoughts come into your mind, you let them drift away or gently come back to your breath. But then you also say that by doing the meditation, you learn things about yourself. So if those thoughts, if they're just blowing up into the wind, into the clouds, how will they be useful? Does my question make sense?
Yeah, that makes very good sense. It's a great question. And mindfulness is much more than being mindful of your breathing. And as you'll see as we go through these 6 weeks, it's really learning a wise or useful way of paying attention to all areas of our life, our full spectrum of human experience. So for right now, one of the things you might learn is you'll learn how difficult it is to be in your breath. You'll learn a little bit about the forces that take you away because you're trying to be present. And even if you don't even want to learn about those things, some of those things you just learn automatically because they'll stand out in the highlight. So you'll start learning that. But for now, that's basically the instructions. Come back to your breathing. Let go of your thoughts. Come back to your breathing. If you have trouble coming back to your breath, then notice what it is that what is making it difficult for you to do so. Then, as we go through the next weeks, I'll teach you how to pay attention to more areas of your life. And as you become more pay attention to more and more, you'll learn more about how you operate. What goes on really goes on here for you. There's a lot of self-learning goes on here. So, other questions? Was it all that clear?
Could you do the same thing lying down or standing up?
Mm-hmm. In Buddhism, there's an expression that there are 4 dignified postures for meditation. I'm always curious. They call it dignified postures. There's sitting, there's standing, there's lying down, and there's walking. And all those are good postures for meditation. And so the most common ones that we use in our tradition are sitting and walking. And the last week, the 6th week, I'll give you a handout that gives you instructions for doing this meditation while you're walking meditation. If you're really sleepy, for example, it can be really good to just do the meditation standing. It's easier to stay alert that way. And so some people, you'll see people occasionally standing because of that reason. Lying down is usually done if someone has some kind of back problem or issue, a medical issue, that makes it difficult for them to sit upright. And the reason for that is that it's really easy to fall asleep when you're lying down. And so it's harder to have strong mindfulness. But some people need to. And in fact, my co-teacher here at IMC is a woman named Andrea Fella. She does most of her meditation lying down because of some kind of sciatic injury that she had. I don't think she does it so much anymore when she teaches, but at home so she's mastered. She's a master at doing lying down meditation. And you see people here occasionally at IMC doing lying down meditation. And occasionally even you also have them snoring.
When I wake up in the morning, I have scores of ideas and things going through my head. And it seems to be a very creative part of the morning. And I usually get up and I'll lay in bed for maybe 20 minutes. And then I try to organize those thoughts and then write them down. That's almost a meditative process that's occurring there. I feel that way.
The word meditation is used in so many broad ways. Here's an interesting statement. If someone comes to you and says, I do sports, it says something to you. You know something about the person, but you know it doesn't tell you much. I mean, do they play football? Do they ping pong? Do they curling? You know, there's many sports, right? You know, it doesn't, you know, what is it? You know, it doesn't tell you much. There's a huge variety of sports. There's as much variety in the world of meditation as there is in sports. So yes, it's a meditation in the sense that it helps you calm down, be relaxed, be more connected in some wonderful inner way. But there's many different techniques for that calming and centering kind of approach, and they have different purposes at different times. And that kind of approach would call more a contemplative practice because it involves thinking. And the mindfulness goes deeper than the world of thinking. It actually goes it goes deeper into the psyche, into the mind, than what's available at the realm of thinking. And we think of thinking in Buddhism as kind of really being a surface layer. And there are times when that surface layer broadens, becomes thicker, when it becomes much more creative. It's quite satisfying. It's a nice thing to be able to, you're very lucky to have that. But the kind of meditation that I'm trying to teach you, the mindfulness practice, is not meant to be so cognitive in nature. It's supposed to allow us to connect to something much deeper within us. This is the last question.
In the past, I've mainly done meditation with a mantra, which has been a lot easier to stay focused, and I find this more difficult.
Right.
Can you talk about, in a way, maybe because this is more difficult, I guess you get more aware of what your thinking is, where I noticed if I do a mantra-based meditation, I can calm the mind down, but I don't really notice anything else going on. I don't notice thoughts or anything. I just wanted to understand the difference.
Right. But mantra meditation is a wonderful thing, and I don't want to knock it. We have mantra meditations in Buddhism, but in the Buddhist context, we also consider Buddhist mantra meditations to be kind of a meditation with training wheels because of the way it helps, you know, supports. But also mantra meditation is more of a concentration meditation than a mindfulness meditation. So it emphasis is on developing calm and concentration and stillness. And people can do that sometimes very well with very little self-understanding. It's almost like they kind of avoid that narrowing of focus and focusing on is a way of avoiding what's really going on, what really makes them tick and all that. And as long as they can stay concentrated, they can stay sometimes quite blissful. And I've had people come on retreat who've done 20 years of mantra meditation and have great capacity for it and can go into really deep states of bliss doing it. But then they come to our retreats and we say, well, we're going to teach you something different here and to pay attention to what's really going on. And they'll come back a day later with eyes wide open and say, I had no idea what I wasn't paying attention to. You know, wow, you know, you know, I'm a mess. You know, I kept it all at bay with the concentration, you know. But now it's the floodgates are open and I get to see all this stuff. With mindfulness meditation, we're actually working with who we are as a human being, as opposed to trying to bypass it, in order to just get calm. And so it tends to be slower because of it. There's all this, we deal with ourselves. But the results are much more deeply transformative. In fact, in the Buddhist tradition, it's the practice of mindfulness which is the practice that leads to full enlightenment. So even though it's so simple to describe, just pay attention to what's happening as it's happening. That's the practice when it's fully developed that leads to the kind of awakening the Buddha had. Okay, so I hope that gave you a foundation, a beginning entry point to this. And next week we'll talk about the body and it'll get more interesting. Thank you.